All right, so happy Sabbath, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful day already. Here in South Florida, we've had a week of rain, and probably that's been the case throughout the Caribbean as well. We've got this pond nearby, and it fills to a certain level, but it doesn't overfill, so that's very nice. Now, tomorrow is July 26, 2020. 28 years ago, on July 26, 1992, was a very special morning. Elisa and I were up before the dawn, and we drove from the Pasadena area down to Temecula, California. And our plan was to take a hot air balloon rise right at sunrise over the vineyards of Temecula. Very beautiful scene. Now, the reason this trip was special was twofold. First, July 26 is Elisa's birthday. The other reason was to be a surprise. So I gave Elisa a teddy bear for her birthday. This exact teddy bear. Now, inside this teddy bear is a secret compartment. Now, I thought I had the ribbon pinned down so she couldn't see the zipper underneath. Inside the secret compartment was an engagement ring. Yes. However, this plan fell apart very quickly in about 3 seconds after I gave her her birthday gift and said, "Hey, I hope you enjoy this." She's like, "What's the zipper?" Like, I thought I had that concealed. So right there in the front seat of her car, before the hot air balloon even got there, I said, "Will you marry me?" So I need to ask you a question before you unzip that zipper. So we did end up getting in the hot air balloon, and I did, for photo opportunities, we actually did take a few photos of me proposing on the balloon and beside the balloon and some other, but the actual proposal was in the front seat of the car. We do have a couple of engagement photos there. You know, for some reason, that tie is looking familiar. I don't know. I can tell you the tie was much easier to get on this morning than those 28-year-old pants. Anyway, those are some engagement photos that we took about a month after our engagement, somewhere in August of 1992. Can we look at the second one there? Yeah. So she obviously looks just as beautiful today as she did 28 years ago. She hasn't changed a bit. However, I'm not really sure who she's married to anymore. Who is this guy? Who even is this guy? That can't be the same guy. Yeah. My title today is 28.0 and counting. It has been 28 years since our engagement. 28.0. Now, I did that. Have you ever seen the bumper stickers on the back of somebody's car? It looks like it says 26.2. And the first time I saw that, I'm like, that is a weird radio station. 26.2. How do you even get to that radio station? I found out later that 26.2 is the distance of a marathon. So we're at 28.0 tomorrow, 28 years since our engagement, and counting. Benjamin, I forgot, can you turn the light on for me? Can you turn around and press the center big button there? I forgot to turn the light on. You have to press it and hold it. There you go. Now point it towards me so I can't see anything. There we go. Now I'm blinded. Seriously. All right. So that's my title. 28.0 and counting. What I'd like to cover today is what I have learned about relationships and marriage in those 28 years. So now you might have gotten, we tried to create a little bit of a theme. Last night, Mr. Smith sent out his Sabbath greeting, and he mentioned a little bit about what he was going to be talking about and actually solicited all of your help. That's not fair. That's cheating when you get the congregation to write your sermon for you. Why didn't I think of that? So anyway, I did ask Elisa to help me with this because it's not just what I've learned, it's what we have learned over 28 years since our engagement. So again, I use this graphic of the 28.0 because a marriage is not a sprint. It is a marathon. Our marriage vows state, for as long as you both shall live. Not until you get tired of each other, or not until you hand the baton off to somebody else. So it's not a relay race and it's not a sprint. It is a marathon. 20% of all marriages end in divorce in the first 5 years. They try to sprint, but it's a marathon. You've got to pace yourself. I believe the key here is to go into marriage with having the right goal in mind. And that is, the goal is you're looking for someone to share your life with. This is not someone that you're just partying with. It's a lifelong commitment. You're looking for a lifelong partner. You know, most of the time, you're not going to know everything about your mate before you get married. You have a dating period. You have an engagement period. For me and Elisa, from the time we met to the time we got married was about 2 years. But you're not going to know everything about that person in even a two-year courtship. Plus, your spouse is going to change over time. In this marathon, just treat this not as a challenge, but as a surprise to help you keep forward. These changes that come up, you know, for those people that get divorced after 5 years, they're looking for something different. Well, hey, keep your mate. They'll change in unexpected ways. A popular phrase that the lottery uses to sell lottery tickets is, you have to be in it to win it. So I'm going to ask you, are you in it, marriage, or any of your long-term relationships, are you in it to win it? Now, there's two aspects to this. First of all, you got to be in it, right? And so are you an active participant in your own marriage? If you're not running the marathon with your partner, you're not going to get to the finish line. So you've got to be in it. And then second of all, once again, what is the goal of your marriage? Did you get married because it seemed like a good idea at the time? Or was it because you were looking for that lifelong partner? A lot of times people will use the mistaken phrase that, oh, this is 50-50. We're in this 50-50, but that's a mistake. If you run half a marathon and then hand the baton off to your partner, or if that's your plan, they're going to get to the finish line. You're not going to be with them. If you both want to win the race, you're both going to have to be in the race from the very start. You have to give 100% from, and both of you have to give 100%. And again, I had Elisa help me with this, so here's one of her quotes. She said, a very important piece of advice that I got from my parents. She said, marry your best friend and keep those lines of communication open, just as when you talked a lot when you were dating, end quote. So if you marry your best friend, you're going to have someone that you look forward to waking up next to, someone that you can share all of your experiences with. I grew up in a small town in Mississippi. And if I was to go back today, I would probably run into people that I went to high school with that have really never left that town. I'd probably, most of the time when I do visit, about once every 2 or 3 years, I will meet one of my classmates within a half a day, just somewhere hanging around on Main Street. But when I was dating my best friend, she asked me this question, do you have a passport? And I said, no, not yet. And she goes, well, we'll fix that. Don't worry, we'll fix that. And you know, so travel is a passion of hers that we love sharing. We've already been around the world twice. And I'm pretty sure that a third time around the world is in the plans before this marathon is finished. Just last week, our wedding anniversary, because we're talking about the anniversary of our engagement here, our actual wedding anniversary was March 14th. Well, if you remember March of this year, everything shut down. So we didn't get, you know, an anniversary trip this year. So we actually took that last week. And they gave us this band. I have lots of props today. They gave us this band to wear as we were around the hotel. And the hashtag is Together in Travel. Now, I think they're talking about the fact that, hey, this is COVID, we're in this together, you've got a partner in the hotel, but I thought that was perfect for Elise and I. They gave us this when we checked in, and I'm like, wow, they gave us an anniversary gift. So hashtag together and travel, that's what me and my best friend like to do. One of the earliest lessons I learned in our marriage was not to say, you're wrong, or you're doing it wrong. Yeah, I learned this one pretty quickly. Elise and I were making up a bed. Now, she likes to make up the bed where the pattern is face down, and then you put the comforter over it, and then you put the pattern, you flip the pattern back up so you can see whatever pattern is on the sheet in nice, bold print there. I'd always put the pattern face up, and I don't know if I had a comforter, and I don't know anything about flipping stuff back. So we were coming at this from two different perspectives. And so as Trevor Daly in Kingston said, when I told her that she was doing it wrong, that was a big mistake. I learned that a much better phrase is, you do that differently, dear. Guys, listen to me. The words, you're doing it wrong, strike that from your vocabulary right now. Never use that. It's not going to get you anywhere. Well, I mean, if you want to have a long conversation, go ahead and keep it in there. But if you want peace in your life, change it to, you do that differently to me than I do. Can you explain to me why? That's going to be a much more peaceful explanation. You know, there's that age-old toilet paper debate. And we do have the picture there. Should it go over or under? You know, there really is no wrong way to hang the toilet paper unless you say you're doing it wrong. In that case, you've made a mistake, a big mistake. You know, by the way, the over, a kid can just walk up to that, hit that, spin it down, and all of your toilet paper's on the floor. Just saying. All right. Another lesson that we've learned is about communication. I would label this one under communication. Communication is important in marriage because so many times what you hear is not what the other person said. When I said to Elisa that she was doing it wrong, I had no ill will, but she probably heard something like, there's something wrong with you. That's not what I said. But how do you feel when somebody tells you that you're doing something wrong? So you need to have open lines of communication. Discuss everything that is part of your marriage. Both parties need to be aware of the successes and trials that their mate is going through. Be honest about your relationships. Be honest about your finances. Maybe about your dreams or the fact that your dreams might be changing, your goals are changing. Be open and honest in those communications. I was just reading a story yesterday, I believe it was, where a woman started noticing long hairs in their bathroom shower. It was a wife and she had short hair, her husband had short hair, and about twice a week she's finding these long hairs in the shower. So one day she came home early, and to find out what was going on. And turns out one of her husband's high school classmates had become homeless. And he was volunteering to allow this friend to come over twice a week to take a shower. And, you know, everything about it was above board and honest and, you know, fine. But the wife had had some suspicions. Why is these long hairs in my shower? Is my husband having an affair? He didn't know how his wife would take it, so he didn't tell her that it was happening. As it turns out, after they had the conversation, she was very good with it and even asked the roommate, the old high school classmate, to move in with them. Since he was homeless, and actually gave him a place to stay. So communication is very important. Even in times of serious discussion, always choose your words carefully. As it is written, be angry, but sin not. Once I was having a discussion with Elisa in the bakery, and she had her back to me. So she's doing something, maybe she was decorating a cake. She and I are trying to have this discussion, and it's not going my way. So I pick up a jelly donut, and I'm holding it over her head. pretending that I'm going to squeeze the jelly out and have the jelly go into her hair. She couldn't see this, of course, but one of our employees could. And I kind of looked at her and I'm like, should I? And she's like, don't get me involved. Thankfully, I was not foolish enough to complete that action. You know, in a marathon, you can get depressed or lose your vision if you hear words like, I quit. Or if you say words like, I quit, or here's a big one, I want a divorce. If either partner in the marathon says those words, it takes the air out of the race. These words can be taken back, but they're very hard to be taken back, and so they should never be said. Always give yourself a warning. If you're thinking that, walk away. Don't say it until you can come back and say something that more clearly expresses your feelings and why you're frustrated, why you might be angry. Last week on Zoom after services, a few of us were discussing the scripture that says, bring every thought into captivity. When you are in a heated disagreement, don't be disagreeable. Don't draw lines in the sand. Don't give ultimatums. There's always going to be a solution. I mean, in the 28 years since we've been engaged, Elisa and I have had disagreements. There have been times when it didn't seem like we were going to agree on something, but eventually we came up with a solution. So knowing that going into it, you have a partner that has goodwill towards you, you have goodwill towards them, that you both do want to find a solution, just keep trying. But here's something else, and I'm sure Mr. Smith is going to be covering this in his split. But we're not alone in this marathon. Elisa also had this to say, quote, we got very good advice when we were counseling with our minister for marriage. Even if we didn't truly understand at the time how we were going to apply it. And what he said was, make God and Christ the third part of your marriage. Think of your relationship as having three legs, like a tripod, with each part needed for it to stand. So, we built our life together. We learned to pray together when we needed to make important decisions, and also when we were thankful for our blessings. We learn that we can tell each other the positive that we feel, and then we can take the negative to God, allowing Him to show in His mercy and His time what the solution is. End quote. So in good times and in bad, ask God to help you find that workable solution through the trials that you're going through. Communication is much more than words. Your actions speak louder than words. There's a book by Gary Chapman called The Five Love Languages. It's the one prop I don't have today. Elisa and I really like this book. And we have a chart that goes along with this book. And so we can see the five love languages here. Words of affirmation, which encourage, affirm, appreciate, and listen actively. Physical touch can be communicated by nonverbal use of body language and touch to show love. Receiving gifts can be communicated through thoughtfulness. It shows that you're making your spouse a priority. Quality time is another one. This is uninterrupted and focused conversations. One-on-one time is important. And so, in this case, the quality time is not sitting there watching TV together. That's not a conversation. And then finally, the last love language here is acts of service. And this can be communicated by letting them know that you're wanting to be helpful, to lighten their load. Now, the interesting thing about these five love languages is that we all need these five things. However, each person prioritizes these five things differently. For me, my number one is physical touch. With Elisa, it's quality time. And that's followed up very closely. She has a tie at number two with acts of service and words of affirmation. She likes when people do things for her. She likes to be appreciated. So we have different languages that we're speaking, but we have to remember to speak the other person's language. You know, I can go by all day long and pat her on the back and give her a massage, give her a hug and a kiss. And, you know, physical touch is high on mine, so that's what I'm speaking. It's not high on her list. It's not one of her top three. And so whereas I'm thinking a little pat on the back as I walk by says, I love you, she's like, what do you want now? You know, because she's all about acts of service. And so since that's really high on her list, she's always looking for things to do for others. And, you know, gifts, receiving gifts is absolutely my number five. It's at the bottom of the five level. I could go my entire life without getting a gift. That would not make me feel unloved. However, for other people, they appreciate gifts. So we need to understand what other people's love languages are. Now, I've been talking about the lessons that I've learned over the last 28 years since we've gotten engaged. Not everybody out there is engaged. Not everybody out there that listening to me is married, but you do have relationships with other people. You have mothers and fathers. You have brothers and sisters. You have coworkers. It's important to learn the language that somebody else is speaking so that you can speak their language. So if if you have children, they're also going to have different love languages. Make sure that you're learning the love language of your children. Speaking of children, the most important relationship in a family is the husband-wife relationship. Children feel more secure in a world when they have two parents that truly love and support them. Elise and I went through a parenting program. We actually went through it twice. I don't know why our kids turned out bad anyway, but anyway, Ben's right there. Just a joke. Okay, so we went through this program twice called Growing Kids God's Way. This is a program that was developed by a husband and wife, Gary and Anne Marie Ezzo. And it was a long program. It's a really big, thick book. But one of the things that they mentioned that really stuck out to me about this husband-wife relationship and how it affects the children is something called couch time. And so couch time is described this way. When the workday is over, take 10 or 15 minutes to sit on the couch as a couple. Couch time is to take place when the children are awake, not after they go to bed. Couch time provides children with a visual sense of your togetherness. It is a tangible way for your child that can measure mom and dad's love relationship and have that inner need satisfied. In addition, couch time provides a forum for mom and dad's personal and relationship needs to be met. So, communication obviously is one of those lessons that we learned, and you have to have, since one of Elisa's love languages is quality time, this was perfect for us. I could come home from work, we would, you know, take care of a few things that needed to be taken care of, and then Elisa and I could sit down on the couch, have our together time where the kids were watching but out of the room, and they could see that mom and dad had this loving relationship where they communicated through their issues and through the issues of the family that was going on. And it gives the children such a great sense of security. The last lesson that I want to cover is from Ephesians 5:33. It says here, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. So stop and think about this for a second, or as you read it here, what did you hear? Because again, something may be said, but we all hear something different. So did you hear that a husband and wife are supposed to love each other? If you heard that, you're wrong. Yeah. Paul, actually, in this verse, is not commanding the wife to love her husband. The command is that she respect him. Why is that? Well, the reason is because love comes naturally to a woman. She doesn't have to be commanded to love her husband. That is a natural outflowing emotion from her. But respect is not natural for women. You know, Paul doesn't command the husband to respect his wife. Why is that? Well, because for men, respect is a natural emotion. It is so often, if you watch movies or if you even listen to yourself when you have a conversation, or if you listen to two guys talking to each other, they will use that term as like the highest level of acceptance when they'll say, well, I can respect that, or I respect that person. And then the lowest level of acceptance is when a guy says, I don't respect him. So for a guy, respect is a natural emotion, but love is not. And so Paul, inspired by God, knows that men need to be told to love their wives, and women need to be told to respect their husbands. It should come as no surprise, but someone has written an entire book and did an entire series of 10 lectures off of this one verse. The title of the book is called Love and Respect. It was written by Dr. Emerson and Sarah Eckrich, and they were marriage, I believe he's a pastor, they're also marriage counselors, and they asked 7,000 people this question. They said, when you are in conflict with your spouse, do you feel unloved at that moment, or do you feel disrespected? So they asked 7,000 people this question. Turns out, when husband and wives are in conflict, 83% of the men said that they feel disrespected, and 72% of the women said that they felt unloved. Dr. Eckrich describes a scenario that goes like this, which he calls the crazy cycle. They're having the two spouses are having some conflict. And again, apply this to a father, a mother, children, co-workers, brother, sister. She reacts in ways that feels disrespectful to her husband when she is feeling unloved. He reacts in ways that feel unloving to his wife when he feels disrespected. So a lot of this falls under, again, communication. One person saying one thing, the other person is hearing something different. Let's talk about this in colors. So women are speaking, hearing, feeling in love, which we'll call pink. Men are speaking, hearing, feeling in respect, which we'll call blue. So one of the keys to getting off the crazy cycle is to try to hear and decode the other person's language. So this is what is, Ben, go ahead and do the next graphic. This is the way it normally looks. The wife is speaking in pink with the pink megaphone. The husband is listening through his blue earphones. So what is being said is not necessarily what's being heard. So what's the solution? It's simple. Men, when you feel disrespected, put on the pink earphones with some bling. So in practice, this seems simple. Men, when you feel disrespected, first, remember that your wife loves you. I'm trying to say wife and love at the same time. Remember that your wife loves you and only has goodwill in mind when speaking to you. Next, without getting angry, communicate that feeling back. So you got frustrated, you misunderstood. Communicate that feeling back to your wife and say, well, this is what I heard. Is that what you meant to convey? That way, you're moving forward in your marathon. You're not getting caught up in that crazy cycle where you're just going in circles. In reality, this is hard. Sounds simple. Just say, hey, this is what I heard. What did you say? But the reason this is hard is because as soon as a man thinks he's been disrespected, it's time for either fight or flight. And our bodies undergo a change. Blood will actually drain from our brains and go to our fist in case we're going to fight, or it goes to our feet in case we're going to run, flight. So what happens? Blood left our brain. So we're supposed to be thinking with this up here, our brain, and it doesn't have any blood in it to do any thinking. So that's why in principle it's easy. Okay, you disrespected me. You probably didn't mean that. What did you really mean? Sounds simple. And if you take the time to think about it, you can do that. But the natural reaction in disrespect is, I'm going to put my foot down. I'm the head of the house. You're going to show me some respect. All the brain has done left our, all the blood has left our brain, and we're speaking brainlessly. So it's hard to think calmly and with pink headphones when there's no blood in the brain. All right. Tomorrow is going to be a special day in our house. And you know, guys, I did do one thing smart. I got a twofer. Not only is tomorrow Elisa's birthday, but it is the day, the anniversary of our engagement. So women love it when you remember dates. And so I can remember one date and get two events out of the way. So tomorrow is going to be a special day in our household. But it is just one day in a marathon that I get to enjoy for the rest of my life. And I have much more to learn. It's 28 and counting, not 28 and done. If you are also running this race, or hope to in the future, remember to have God on your side, running with you and assisting you. Marriage is a lifelong commitment that requires 100% participation from both partners. Learn your spouse's differences and their strengths and learn to embrace them. Learn to communicate what their love language is. To everyone you meet, be a unified front. And I'll leave you with this. Husbands, love your wives, and wives, respect your husband.